Okay, at this time, I'll call the meeting of the Program and Allocations Committee to order. First order of business on our agenda is to confirm a quorum.
Yes, we have a quorum.
Okay. Next is the consent calendar. Is there any member wanting to pull an item? Any member of the public? Seeing none, can I get a motion for approval?
So moved.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Next, we will move on to our regional projects. And first would be to change two conditions on the prior allocation of the Regional Measure 2 funds to the Trans-Bay Joint Powers Authority for right-of-way acquisition. This will be presented to us by Kenneth.
Thanks, Commissioner Glover. This is item number 3A, and it's a recommendation to make a revision to a January 2008 RM2 allocation related to the purchase of land for the Trans-Bay Terminal project. The condition had required quick claim deeds to be executed between the two agencies for certain properties, including properties at 75 Natoma and at 546 Howard. And if the project had not proceeded to construction, these deeds would protect MTC, and MTC would have certain rights to reclaim its investment there. More recently, TJPA is entering into a $171 million bridge loan to get started on certain construction contracts before their federally approved TIFIA loan is fully funded. So they have requested that they use, as primary collateral, they'd be able to use the deeds on those two properties, and that MTC would temporarily take a second position on those two properties, as well as other collateral that the lender is requesting. The primary collateral is the proceeds from the tax increment financing, as well as certain revenues from AC Transit and others. So they're requesting that we relinquish our first position and move into a second position. And once that bridge loan is fully repaid, we would return to the first position. The risk to MTC on this is if something were to happen and there was a default situation, then we would not have the first position but the second position on the loan. However, having said that, MTC's total bridge toll investment in the project is roughly $350 million to date. They are moving forward with the phase one construction at this time, and staff is recommending that we do move into this second position temporarily. Once the loan is paid back, which is expected in 2015, but the term actually goes out to 2018, and the federal funds would then show up to have the permanent TIFIA loan, MTC would assume its original position in the first position on those two properties. So with that, we are recommending that the commission or the committee refer this resolution 3651 to the commission for approval, and that you direct staff to go ahead and execute these changes to the quick claim deeds agreements.
Thank you. Are there any questions, comments? Commissioner Tissier?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Commissioner Bates?
No, thank you. So, as reading the report, is there more than, are these the only two properties that were pledging for this security for this loan, or is there other properties?
These are the only two properties that MTC funded that we are moving into the second position. The primary collateral is other funding, primarily the future community facilities district funding and AC Transit revenues. There were also a couple Caltrans properties that TJPA had requested that Caltrans essentially do the same thing.
Why are they requesting so much? I mean, obviously, this contingent upon the Congress acting, right, in 2015, is that the main problem, is if Congress doesn't act, or are there other potential problems that I'm not aware of?
Commissioner, if I could pitch in here, because I think a little history is in order. When this was in the early days of funding the project, and the authority asked us to help them buy some parcels because they needed to assemble a lot of parcels, not only to build the thing, but as you know, selling those parcels is part of the financing strategy for the project. And we said fine, but we insisted on the time at getting these deeds because there was a substantial risk at the outset of this project about whether it would in fact go forward or not. And so the deeds were essentially our security that if the project cratered, we could inherit the property, so to speak, and then dispose of it and get our money back. And at this point in the project, I really believe our initial interest in having these deeds has been satisfied. I think there is very little risk at this point that the project won't be completed. They're not going to leave a hole in the ground and an unbuilt building in downtown San Francisco. So I think the notion of moving us from first to second position is reasonable. I think it'd be appropriate if we went from first position to no position, frankly, because our original interest has been, I think, secured in for all intents and purposes, and that is to make sure the building's going to get built. The reason the request is being made to us is because their private banker that they're negotiating with is looking around for security. And so it's, I think, as simple as that. Whether that banker is being too mean to him or not, you know, I'm not here to judge. But both Caltrans and we, and we're recommending to you as our policy board, Caltrans has agreed to move into a similar position, and we think it's appropriate for you to do so as well.
Well, it sounds like the investment is secure, but in order to make the payment, it is contingent upon the Congress making that?
Well, the TIFIA program has to continue. I mean, this project has a cash flow problem that won't quit, right? Mm-hmm. That it has a lot of its financing, a lot of its funding comes at the end of the project. And they're trying not to glut the market over there by selling too many parcels too soon. So they've got one TIFIA loan that is one form of bridging that gap, and this other private loan now is another form of bridging that gap.
Okay. Well, with that information, I'm happy to move the item.
I just have a question. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, I just had a... Steve, I just had a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Staff mentioned the various ways that this facility is going to be funded, and including community facilities district. So there's been a lot of discussion in the media recently about that. And is that in risk of jeopardizing this? I know that this is, you know, our role is a piece of it, but could you just provide a little bit of, shed a little light on that element, too?
Well, and I suspect that Commissioner Weiner might be able to do an even better job than me, but that Mello-Roos piece of the funding puzzle, there have been some talk about litigation, and whether or not that occurs, I can't sit here and tell you. What we have seen over the life of this project is various ideas for funding. Those that have worked have stuck, and those that have failed have been replaced by others. So whether the Mello-Roos will turn out to be true in exactly the form and fashion that it's being proposed, I don't know. I think our underlying interest, though, is to make sure the project is built. And I think the project sponsors and the whole city family, as they call it, over in San Francisco, they are so committed to this that they are not going to let it fail, and they are not going to let it be unfinished. So fundamentally, I think our interest is secured. Whether it's the Mello-Roos that, you know, is the last piece of frosting on the cake, or it's something else, I can't be sure. But I think they have more than adequate financial horsepower and a very, very strong interest in completing the project.
Okay. And I defer to Commissioner Weiner if he wants to add something. I appreciate his leadership and making sure that this important public facility is completed. But I guess the other thing that would be helpful is to have kind of maybe a summary for the committee at some future date in terms of where the funding sources are for the project, just as a point of information.
Yeah, we are about all in now. I mean, almost all the toll money that we have to give them, I think we have given them. And so this is one last thing they could ask us for, so I guess we should have counted on them asking.
Okay. Commissioner Weiner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, it's going to get done. It's not really a question of if, and it's going to happen. Some of the uncertainty around the Mello-Roos has more to do with funding of downtown extension, because when you look at the money that the developers were trying to renege on, that's what would probably be impacted the most, that portion that goes to help fund the downtown extension. I think the Mello-Roos district will be formed. I don't think the actual voting on that is going to be an issue. There are enough developers who support it. Some are for a variety of reasons, some who are just being, good actors or otherwise sort of compelled to support it. So it'll be formed. It's unclear if Boston Properties will file a lawsuit. They've threatened to do that. I hope they don't. I know there's been a lot of pressure in the community for Boston Properties and other developers not to do that. If they do it, there is a legal argument that they're in breach of the district that was formed. The legislation creating the Transbay District requires developers to quote-unquote participate in the Mello-Roos. And so the city has expressed the position that if a developer were to file a lawsuit to overturn the Mello-Roos, or to vote against creating the Mello-Roos, that would be a breach, and that the city would be in a position to withhold certificates of occupancy for their properties. So I think the city is taking a very, very firm line that the developers absolutely have to keep up their end of the bargain, I'm cautiously optimistic we'll be able to succeed.
Hey, thank you. Any other questions?
Yes. Thank you.
Looking at this in terms of its future plans and connections, what I think my sister and I, when we were in Washington, we were looking at that there's still not a way to smoothly connect with BART. It's still like a walking, like it's a two-block walk. It seems to me that if we're really going to, especially when the high-speed rail comes, if we're really going to make this a complete connection, that we need to address that, and whether it's a people mover or something that's smoother, if it's truly going to make a loop around the Bay Area, that the commission has to look at that. And I'm particularly concerned. I know it's like a decade away, and maybe at the earliest, but how we plan for the future, because this project certainly started planning a decade ago, and has finally come together on the San Francisco side. But what to me is incomplete is then how does this terminal then connect with the whole East Bay BART system? And if we're really talking about a system and we put so much money in BART and we're putting it into extending it to San Jose, and yes, it will go around the San Jose side, but it doesn't necessarily then complete that loop back to the East Bay. And again, I'm not going to be here. Many of us may not be here by the time we look at that. But if we don't have that discussion, we don't have that planning now, I think it then again leaves the East Bay where the population is shifting. According to the ABAC studies, it will leave the East Bay connection incomplete. And so I don't expect San Francisco to worry about that, but I do expect us as a regional body to at least have that discussion and put that on our agenda.
Commissioner, I would agree with that. I think as a matter of regional connectivity, it is something that's fallen between the chairs. It's not part of Phase 1. As Commissioner Weiner noted, Phase 2 is what's up next, which is primarily the rail-related work. But I hope as part of Phase 2, and Phase 2 has got a funding shortfall to start with, so this is another $100 million on top of it. But I really think we ought to try to come to grips with this question, because making sure there is a quick connection that ideally would be weather-protected between those two facilities, between BART and Transbay, I think is something that, that we ought to figure out a way to afford. We just haven't figured it out yet.
I'm doing my transition memo now to the mayor-elect, but I think this is one of the issues. I think it we should establish, but the MTC should take regional responsibility because it's not just Oakland, but it's all the East Bay cities that have a stake in this. And so I couldn't tell on this whether or not this land is leverage or whatever on that. But until we start having a committee and actually discussing it, we don't know what leverage we have. And the resources that we're continuing to put into this, we may have to, quite frankly, integrate it to make it happen. San Francisco's booming. I sort of laughed. I mean, the cost of land in San Francisco is only going to go up. So the value of this is only going to go up on our vote today. So and increasingly that will be so in downtown Oakland. So I would ask us Mr. Chair, to consider at least putting together a small committee to start that discussion.
Okay. I think if I heard the executive director right, this will be a part of the phase two discussion as we go forward.
It will be, and you'll recall that in the long-range plan that you adopted last year, we teed this project up for federal New Starts money, and we also teed it up for future bridge toll funding. So I think the discussion is going to occur, and it's going to occur here, and I think quite a few of you will be here for it, because if we want to move that project forward in the near term, just as we want to move forward the second leg of the BART extension in San Jose near term, we've got to start getting our ducks in a row probably over the next 18 months.
Commissioner. Chair Worth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to concur heartily with Mayor Kwan's comments relative to the link between high-speed rail and BART. Obviously, when the decision was made to go through the Pacheco Pass as opposed to the Altamont, it had huge implications for the East Bay. And I think that the connection between BART and high-speed rail is really essential. I mean, when you look at the cost of doing a retrofit down the road, as we're experiencing in some of these projects, the cost just go way, way up. And I think that the fact that we are putting, East Bay toll payer toll dollars into projects like this, it's really critical that the benefit to East Bay connectivity with San Francisco is really essential. So I think it's something that we can also, in working with BART, with San Francisco, with Oakland, can, the East Bay cities can work to try to have this, as you mentioned, serious discussions and some real plans in the next year and a half to be able to have that, so that given the fact that costs continue to rise and the connectivity is really going to be essential in all the elements we're putting together.
So I think that we've heard some direction to staff is that we want to make sure that this is a part of a discussion to take place up in the near future. Commissioner Bates.
Thank you very much. So I was under the impression that high-speed rail gets to San Jose and we connect BART. Isn't that the logical place to make the first connection for people who wish to go to the East Bay?
That's one place, but again, our experience is you try to give folks multiple options.
I agree.
You want the airport connection north of that at SFO, and then you want the downtown connection north of that.
Yeah, okay.
People are like water. They find all different ways to travel.
No, I think it's my own experience going to the Capitol Corridor. I mean, I go to Richmond because it's so much easier. It connects right there, and it works perfectly. So there are other options for people wishing to connect to BART rather than downtown San Francisco, which I'm in favor of making that connection, but I think it's going to be costly and take a long time.
Keep in mind, though, that Caltrain, unlike BART, can skip stops. And the baby bullet service that they run now, probably if you had a race between BART in San Jose and Caltrain in San Jose and you tried to get to the north faster, I might put my money on Caltrain.
Okay, so as a part of the motion, the direction that's given to staff is also to make sure that the discussion is a part of our upcoming meetings. Okay. Is there a motion for approval? We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Thank you. We'll now go to item B, and this is Transportation Development Act, triannual audit report, and approval of the 2014 Productivity Improvement Program. This also will be presented by Kenneth and George.
Yeah, this is item 3B. And as you mentioned, Commissioner, it's a presentation on a couple things. The first thing is the Transit Development Act audits, the triennial audits. The second thing is trying to incorporate in the Transit Sustainability Project performance metrics. And finally, an action item is the Productivity Improvement Program that you annually adopt. So essentially what we are trying to do here is this is transit operating performance, and we've had in the past various ways that we've communicated this information to you, and we're trying to streamline this process. The TDA audits are obviously a state code mandated audits that occur for all the operators. The TSP recommendations are something that you all adopted in 2012, and as you can see in the middle chart there, there's some overlap on the performance metrics that we look at. And for the TSP large operator metrics, there is a requirement that by fiscal year 2016-17, that they are able to, the big seven operators are able to reduce cost by 5% in one of those three categories. And we're obviously have some focus on the cost, and that's because when we were going through the TSP, the recommendations were showing that cost was a very important element of the cost, productivity, and passenger metrics. So with that introduction, I'm going to ask George to come up and go over the audits for the operators that are listed at the top of your screen there.
Good morning, Chairman Glover and the committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to present our findings from the TDA performance audits for fiscal year 14. The audit period that we examined during this time frame was for fiscal years 2011 through fiscal year 2013. And the five audit activities that you see on the presentation there were mainly defined through the scope of the contract that we have with the MTC to review the data collection and reporting methods for five TDA operating statistics. These are operating statistics that are defined specifically in the Transportation Development Act and include operating costs, vehicle service hours, vehicle service miles, unlinked passenger trips, and full-time equivalent employees. We also examine as part of the audit program the trend in performance indicators, not just for the 3 years of the current audit period, but also add to that the prior audit period, giving us a six-year time frame, and we'll be presenting some of those trends to you in a few minutes. The audit also examines compliance with various statutory and regulatory requirements. Just to let you know, there were no issues found with any of the compliance requirements for any of the operators during this audit cycle. Reviewing actions to implement prior audit recommendations, and then to make findings and recommendations pertaining to this particular audit period. So the next slide shows the cost per hour. So the following slides, we're mainly going to focus on highlights of cost efficiency, cost per vehicle service hour, and also passenger productivity, passengers per vehicle service hour. This shows the trend for the Bay Area Rapid Transit, and as you can see from the trend line, costs did increase over the six-year time frame from $247 at the beginning of the audit period to about $288 at the end of the audit period. This represents an overall increase of 17%, However, at the bottom of the slide, you'll see that the average annual change in the Bay Area Consumer Price Index is presented, along with the average annual change for the cost per hour indicator. And as you can see, BART's average annual increase was over the CPI at 3.2% compared to the CPI at 1.9%. Mainly, the trend line was influenced by increasing cost and steady service levels. The next slide shows the two large bus operators that were audited this time frame, AC Transit, which is represented by the blue line on the top of the chart, and the green line represents County Connection. The AC Transit's operating cost per hour increased from $152 per hour to $182 at the end of the audit period. And you can see that the majority of the increase occurred during this audit period, despite the fact that AC Transit held total operating costs fairly steady. They did contract their service, and as a result of that, the cost per hour indicator increased significantly. Similarly, the County Connections trend line went from $99 to $120, also an overall increase of about 21% over the six-year time frame. And this particular trend line was influenced mainly by reductions in costs, but at the same time, the agency was reducing service levels. The cost reductions that occurred over this six-year time frame were 8%, but the service level reductions were 24%. Toward the end of the audit period, there was a slight recovery in some of the service levels, but not enough to really dampen out the trends. The next series of slides just give you highlights of what were some of the cost drivers for each of these larger agencies. Where BART is concerned, during the last 3 years, now this is just the 3 years of the audit period, 2011 through 2013, 16.6% overall increase in total operating costs was observed. Fringe benefits increased an average of 1.4%, although that might not seem like a large increase, which it isn't. It's important to remember that fringe benefits represent about 40% of all of BART's total operating costs. Other contributing cost categories were services, increased 11% per year, materials and supplies 13% per year, and casualty and liability costs increased about 17%. Combined with their increases in service levels, 2.6%, that's one of the reasons that the cost trend did experience an increase during the audit period. The good news is that the ridership did increase 14%. This was following a decline that was observed during the prior audit period between 2008 and 2010, when number of unlinked passenger trips did decline. AC Transit, the total operating costs increased 2.7% over the audit period. Most of that increase was experienced in 2012 with a slight decrease in 2013. That combined with the decrease, as I mentioned earlier, in the service levels is what resulted in the rise in their cost per hour. Unlinked passenger trips, again, decreased 4% during the audit period, mainly in 2012. There was a slight increase in 2013 of about 2.4% in ridership, so there was a little bit of a recovery. And then lastly, for the large operators, 3CTA, I have to apologize here that less than 1% over the audit period is incorrect. There was a mistake there. That really should read 6.6%. I apologize for that error during the audit, and that was their increase over the audit period. Even though they did increase service hours over the same time frame, that's the reason we observed the increase in cost per hour. We had cost outpacing the increase in service levels. And then no significant change in unlinked passenger trips. They're holding steady at around 3.3 million passengers per year. The next slide shows the cost per vehicle service hour for the smaller bus operators. And you'll notice that there's one line here that we see going down, which represents Petaluma. And that's typically a trend we don't see in most of the transit agencies. However, Petaluma is a smaller agency, and in 2010, the city went through a service restructuring to try and rationalize their service and match it more towards the demand, which was very successful, and they were able to reduce their cost per hour from $99 in 2008 to $76 an hour in 2013. For Santa Rosa, the cost trend did show a decrease at the beginning of the audit period, but then began to rise. Even though costs were held steady, the vehicle service hours had experienced a slight increase and then a decrease in 2013, which is why between 2012 and 2013 you'll see a slightly larger increase in the cost per hour there. And lastly, the Sonoma County Transit, they pretty much held their cost per hour steady throughout most of the six-year time frame and even managed to decrease their cost per hour during the 3 years of the audit period between 2011 and 2013. So for the small operators, what the cost categories that tend to drive their cost numbers, for Santa Rosa, the first bullet would be applicable employee salary and benefits reflecting their labor agreements and citywide policies. For all of the operators, fuel and lubricant cost increases of 5% to 13% per year were observed, and also purchased transportation, which for Sonoma County Transit and the City of Petaluma represents the largest share of their cost. They were slightly moderate, but there was a 3% increase over the 3 years of the audit period. And as we had mentioned, the service restructuring for the City of Petaluma was a significant event for them, which resulted in 13% improvement in their cost efficiency over the 3 years of the audit period. This next slide just basically shows a comparison of the cost per hour for all of the bus services, with AC Transit at $182 an hour, and then 3CTA at $120. It's important to keep in mind here, just in terms of each of these cost numbers, the level of service that's being purchased by each of these agencies. Just to give it a little perspective, AC Transit operates about 1.6 million vehicle service hours as compared to the other operators. County Connection operates a little more than 213,000 hours per year. Petaluma operates about 16,000 hours per year. Santa Rosa operates 87,000, as well as Sonoma County. They both operate about the same level of service. In these next two slides, we show the a comparison of the cost per hour increase, average annual increase for the large operators relative to other large operators in the Bay Area, as well as other California agencies that are of similar size, and also compared to the CPI. And as you can see, AC Transit with an average, and it's important to note that this is for 2008 through 2012. The 2013, we used publicly available information to calculate the data for the peer agencies. So 2013 is not in this slide and the following slide. So that's why you might see a difference between the average annual increases here versus the previous slides. So AC Transit and 3CTA, both a little over 4% average annual increase in cost per hours as compared to 7.3% for the other Bay Area operators during the same time frame. Other California operators are at around 3% average annual increase in cost per hour and versus the CPI of 1.7% per year. For the smaller operators, the Petaluma which is a unique situation where they had a cost reduction, average annual decrease in their cost per hour of just about 4%. If we, and eliminating the changes that occurred at Santa Rosa in 2013, shows a slight decrease in their cost per hour between 2008 and 2012 as compared to the other Bay Area operators at 2.7%. And Sonoma County at 1.7%. So all three of the smaller operators' performance is relatively better than the average for not only the other Bay Area operators that were part of the peer group, but also for other California systems as well. All right, and this last slide that we present is the measure passengers per vehicle service hour, which is a measure of passenger productivity. The arrows indicate in the second column where that productivity indicator trend was for the evaluation period. For BART, we observed an increase not only in productivity but also an increase in ridership. With added riders, productivity typically does increase as well. AC Transit held steady in terms of their ridership, but with reductions in the service level, with reductions in ridership, let me rephrase that. The productivity held steady, but their ridership did decrease, but because they were also reducing service levels, they were able to maintain the same level of productivity. 3CTA maintained both productivity and ridership levels during the audit cycle. The city of Petaluma, due to its restructuring experience, both an increase in its productivity and also an increase in its ridership. They were able to serve more passengers as a result of their service restructuring. Santa Rosa did experience a decrease in its productivity. Even though ridership remained unchanged, the service levels didn't necessarily match the level of ridership, which resulted in a slight decrease in ridership. It is about 1% overall. And then finally, Sonoma County Transit did maintain its passenger productivity over the audit period, despite some decreases in total ridership. Did the commissioners have any questions?
Any questions? Okay.
I'm sorry. Could you show the BART slide again? The first one was where you...
The BART trend line?
Yeah, the first one. No, the one that showed the... I'm sorry. The one that showed the productivity and the cost. The first... It was when your very first slide. I'm sorry. I don't have the... I should have looked at it here. It's back further. Keep going back. back.
No, this would...
Let me see if I can explain. So, I mean, the productivity is obviously important, and we want to make sure we keep the costs under control. But it seems to me that the main thing is the ridership versus the cost. Do you do anything to show how much it costs per rider to move them around?
Yes, in the detailed audit reports, there we also present trends in cost per passenger.
Do we have that here? Can you?
We don't have that in these slides, but.
But generally speaking, it seems like BART has gone down the cost per passenger because the
commissioner
has gone.
The commissioner, I might be able to help you. There's an attachment one to your memo. Uh-huh. Which is a little bit of a scorecard of how these operators are doing relative to, and these are the large systems here, not the mishmash we had in this audit, because the large systems, you'll recall, are the ones subject to your performance standards under the Transit Sustainability Project. And you'll recall that we had quite a bit of debate with the transit operators before you adopted them, and they were very unhappy, generally speaking, that you were adopting standards at all. But they all insisted that they have sort of a menu, that they just didn't want to be stuck with operating costs per service hour, which really leaves the passengers out, right? And they wanted to have some passenger-related standards. And I think these results show why they insisted on that. And as you say, more passengers is good news. And if you have a performance standard that compares your cost to your passengers, you could sort of meet it one of two ways, right? You could control your costs or you could get more people. Right. And generally speaking, what these operators are doing to make progress toward our standards is they're carrying more folks, which is good. But over the long run, the findings of our sustainability project were you need to do both. You need to carry more people and you need to be more efficient with the dollars you have. And that is where we are still not connecting. Now, obviously, each of these systems has been going through some pretty difficult labor negotiations lately, and it'll take some time to figure out exactly how those are going to play out. But I think the fundamental conclusion that we made, that we needed not only to grow the ridership base in the Bay Area to get more bang for our buck, but we also needed to spend fewer bucks. And we're making progress on the first, and quite a bit of it in the case of some systems like BART. But we're still not making enough progress on the second, and that's where our sustainability challenge, I think, is going to remain. If you go to slide, I think it's 12, I think it really highlights it. You know, I think George perhaps wanted to show you that AC and Contra Costa were doing better than the rest of the Bay Area, and that's good. But look at the other Bay Area, which is primarily Muni and VTA and Golden Gate in terms of size. Look at that turquoise bar in the middle versus the rest of California or the CPI, and you can see the problem we've got. We've got costs that are still growing much faster than other transit systems in the state, and then general inflation across a lot of industries. That's what we got to get control of.
But I do think this chart is very informative, and I think it's unfortunate you didn't highlight it in the presentation, and I should have looked at it a little more closely. But
actually, that will be presented by Kenneth in just a few minutes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so, I'm sorry, Kenneth. We're stealing your thunder over here.
So
okay, because I think that's, for me, the cost per passenger and the cost per passenger mile is what really counts in terms of, you know, but anyway.
Okay. If there are no other audit-specific related questions, I'll just turn it back to Kenneth to go over the...
Okay, Kenneth.
I'll keep going here. I think that Steve did mention some of the stuff that we were going to highlight moving forward. But again, the idea was these are operating performance metrics, and we are trying to put them all in one place for you, and we are trying to link the TSP with the TDA audits and with the state-required productivity improvement program projects. So moving forward, our recommendation is that we use the very metrics that Commissioner Bates was referring to as the productivity improvement projects for the large operators. And then for the smaller operators, some of the other findings from the Transit Sustainability Project. And we've worked with them over the past 6 months, and I think we have general agreement with that. So just to refresh your memory, on the largest seven operators, the performance metrics were to reduce the operating cost per service hour, passenger, or passenger mile by 5% by 16-17. So it really is an informational report today, but by 16-17, the resolution that you adopted says that the commission will link existing and new operating and capital funds administered by MTC towards progress in achieving those performance targets. So to get to the chart that Steve was referencing and Commissioner Bates was talking about, the first of the three metrics is the cost per hour. And potentially this is the one that we have the most concern with, because none of the agencies at the moment are on track to meet that. If you see the second to last column, that essentially is a report card on their performance, and if anybody was, there's a couple agencies below negative 2.6% for Golden Gate and negative 2.9% for SFMTA, so they are on the right track. but the cost for other agencies is going at a rate that they would not potentially hit this metric. There are some issues with the data in the data collection for Caltrain and Samtrans, so we're still working with them on that, and there's a couple footnotes that explain that there. I want to quickly just bring up one chart that we didn't include today, but we used to show you a chart that showed the cost that the region is investing. That was $2.2 billion at the time in transit operating, and then what we were purchasing. We were purchasing hours of service, and then finally what sort of result were we getting, and that was passengers, the increase or decrease in passengers. And as Steve was mentioning, you want to kind of control your cost and really invest wisely and be able to get a bunch of hours of service and then finally place those hours of service in the right places so that you get the return on investment, which is ultimately the passengers. This chart is the cost per passenger, the one that you were just discussing, and as you can see, three of the seven agencies are hitting this. The cost per passenger, in the region over the last couple years, the big increases were along the rail lines, BART and Caltrain, as well as in San Francisco. So you can see some of those are doing really well on that metric, and they're on pace to hit that by 16-17. The final metric that was included as part of the TSP was this cost per passenger mile, and this is where the agencies are doing the best. It looks like five out of the seven are actually hitting this metric. And I think that we as staff at MTC want to go back and work a little bit more with the agencies to really understand the value of this, because it's obviously linked to the passengers, and the passenger mile is linked to the average trip length, and that's in a lot of agencies that's self-reported, and you know that one may be subject to various interpretations. So we want to keep working with the agencies on this one, and as Steve mentioned, to really focus on getting some agencies to hit that first metric, the cost per passenger. So again, I guess this is our report card. It's the good news is six of the seven agencies are achieving at least one of the 5% reduction targets. The second bullet up there is our concern about cost control and how important that is, because that allows you to put more hours of service on the street. I mentioned that there are some issues with the data collection. That's the last bullet. And that staff, we would be working on that cost per passenger metric and really understand from the operators why they think this should be included as one of the metrics. And in your packet, there is a list of all of the productivity improvement projects for the small operators, and we're really focusing there on coordination between the agencies, mobility management, and one big push of recent is the Clipper implementation that has been rolled out to the small agencies, and we think that could be a kind of a springboard into other coordination efforts. So their PIP projects are essentially focused on these efforts. So with that, if there are no questions, what we are asking you to approve today is this Resolution 4160, and that is the 2014 Productivity Improvement Program projects that are listed in the attachments.
Okay, are there any other questions?
I do have a question.
Commissioner Speary, followed by Mayor.
Steve, on the small operators, you know, as we go through the TSP, do we put together best practices, or what are the types of things that the small operators can do or should be doing, you know, as far as service and institutional improvements? I mean, do we put together any type of proposal or at least guidance for the smaller operators? It seems like there's a tremendous pressure being put on the smaller operators to do things that really they can't afford to do or they are not sustainable. And so do we have guidelines or you know, do we make a separation there between the large and small operators?
Well, when we go through these audits, I mean, one of the requirements of these audits is that the findings be presented to the board of the respective agencies. And that is supposed to be the feedback loop where they see how they're doing. And since we do these audits in groups, that they have the ability to sort of compare themselves, both large and small operators, to the other folks who are in the group. I think the honest answer is we probably don't do enough. We had a decision to make, you'll recall, when we entered the Transit Sustainability Project, whether we were going to focus on all the systems or just the big ones, since the big ones are like 95% of the cost. And we said we're going to focus on the big ones, and I think the small operators were probably just as happy that we did. But we really haven't done a similar rigorous review of them like we did with the large systems. And whether that's something you all have an interest in, I'm not sure their position has changed, but if yours indicates an interest, maybe that's a piece of work we could think about in the future.
You know, for me, they play such an important role as feeding into the system and this connectivity and, you know, making it a seamless experience using transit. I think we should go through that exercise or at least explore it. I really think there's opportunities here for the smaller operators, you know, if they can adopt some of these best practices and follow some of the guidelines, I think there would be a tremendous benefit. And I think the timing is right now, and so I would like to see us pursue something like that.
Well, if there's sufficient interest in that idea, maybe we could just sketch out a plan of how we might go about that. As you know, part of the agenda with the smaller systems is how many small systems should there be? And I know that's been a topic in your county, in Commissioner Dodd's county, and we've had varying degrees of success on that subject, let's just say. We'll put something on paper and perhaps have some commissioners who represent the smaller systems give us some advice about how to proceed.
Steve, I and you obviously were touching on my interest is seeing more consolidations, you know, like what we've had in county with Soltrans and the success of that. And I think this study would help facilitate that more, especially in our case, and maybe throughout the region. So I would like to see us at least.
There's one slide. I don't know if we can go back to it, Kenneth. The one that had the small bars, the colored bars, and it had Santa Rosa and Sonoma County on it. Go back. There you are. One thing that struck me, typically when we show you these charts, the ones with the barbershop pole are the contracted ones, and usually they do better than in-house ones because they, you know, it's just cheaper labor. That's how they save their money. If you look at Santa Rosa and Sonoma County Transit, that's SCT, that's a rare case where the in-house system is beating the contract operator. They provide about the same level of number of service hours. Their service profiles are quite different because Santa Rosa is more compact and the county is the county. It's a big county, too. But back to best practices, Commissioner, that'd be a place where you'd want to look at Santa Rosa and like, what are they doing? You know, because you look at AC Transit on the other hand, and what you would see in the East Bay with the smaller contracted systems is, you know, half the cost.
Mr. Chair, would it be possible for me to break in at this point on this particular topic? Would that be okay?
If it's related.
I'd like to be after him.
Okay, if it's related, then
it's
the mayor.
It's extremely related because Sonoma County has been called out, and I was listening to Commissioner Sperring's remarks and then our executive director, of course. And so, yes, I would be very interested in participating in discussions on how we might examine these experiences, how we might look at the pluses and the minuses. And I had just made a note to myself that this is something that we in the Sonoma County Transportation Authority should be examining the results that we've had today, and because we do deal with these operators. Petaluma, frankly, is an outlier. I mean, it's a much smaller geographic area, but the Santa Rosa Sonoma County Transit Authority, that's a very interesting comparison, as has been indicated. So I just wanted to say I'm up for this and would be very interested in joining in these discussions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor Quinn.
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
So thank you. I've been looking at, I looked at this report with great interest. I think the problem of discussion we have to weigh are other values. So, for instance, AC Transit, and maybe the others have to have invested in a lot of green energy vehicles. We're a little bit more like San Francisco system, and they have the great volume to bring down the passenger costs. And hopefully, with the passage of BB, and thank you for everybody in Alameda County who worked on that, and the giving Clipper passes now to high school students in the future, that will definitely bring up their passenger load, and it won't necessarily add to the cost because it'll be paid for by BB. So you have to look at the different kind of phenomenon that you use. And whether or not there's supplements in the regional body. I know that we invested in the bus rapid transit for International Boulevard, and I've made that a key priority as mayor, and we're layering over other grants. So we got it was my priority for arts, and so we're going to build cultural plazas along International Boulevard. It's my priority for the promise zones to work with the low-income families along that. We will be making an announcement in early December about a pool of affordable housing funds that will become available to that corridor. So it's when we look at MTC, we're looking at the transportation part, but we also, through our Bay Area plan, talked about other issues for the overall climate action plans, et cetera. So building more housing along these corridors and how that impacts the per vehicle cost in the long run, particularly with a lot of capital going to bus rapid transit. So I don't know what we count, what we don't count. But we always have to weigh, I think, two issues. That what San Francisco and Oakland particularly done in terms of climate action and putting that dense public transportation in these highly concentrated areas and then building housing around it will have to be weighed. And quite frankly, Oakland, unlike San Francisco, is a less affluent community. The public transportation, most of our systems that we're looking at are moving commuters across the Bay Area who tend to be higher income, whereas in Oakland, AC Transit's really actually serving a lot of working-class people, higher percentage of working-class people. So we always have to weigh that and who we're serving and in the overall cost. So to me, there's a social value as well as the absolute cost. And some of those things, particularly for climate action, I don't know about you, but I was up early in the morning listening to Obama and China. The one thing I know being on the cutting edge is we can get China to go to electric vehicles, and we make that same commitment in California. It was sort of we've led California, has led a lot of discussions. It's going to take a lot of pressure off the climate issues across the world. But and the reason we're able to interest the Chinese in that is they've been looking at some of our systems and how green they can be. And so I just wanted to leave you with that kind of a global viewpoint, a lot of what we're doing here in the Bay Area. If we lead California and California leads the nation, and if we can create different systems here in the United States, we might actually save the planet, which would be my goal now. But again, going back to these figures, it is I'd be interested in us looking at AC Transit and Santa Rosa in comparison, because they're different kinds of systems, but they're all part of our responsibility. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Prisgrasky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is it was close. This is for the director. I want to refer to Attachment 1, if you would, Steve. This is for the large operators. First of all, this is a really very valuable report and really appreciate it. In relationship to the operating cost per passenger and operating cost per passenger mile, it looks like we're doing a pretty good job of starting to make the meet the performance metrics and the targets. My question is, do we weigh one as more significant than the other? Does the operating cost per passenger, is that a more weighty evaluative tool than operating cost per passenger mile? My lean is towards the latter, the passenger mile, but I'd like to know how we as an agency are looking at this.
Our history on this, Commissioner, is it's very difficult to get down to one measure because you get so many arguments from people that that measure doesn't accurately reflect my system, right? You know, BART serves this huge service area. Muni serves this dense area with, you know, half of the people in the area riding the thing. So how do you compare an apple to an orange, et cetera? What I would urge you to do, and the operators insisted on having three options, right? So they don't need to meet all three. I think they just need to meet one. And as I said earlier, focusing on passengers is a very good focus for the region as a whole. It helps us achieve a lot of different objectives. But to carry those passengers, you need to pay the piper. And you all know who the operators come to when they need more subsidy money. They come to you. So if the only way we're going to carry more passengers is to pay more money, then we're going to need to raise more money. If we can carry more passengers and also control at least the rate of increase in the cost of carrying them, then I think we've got a more sustainable game plan. So I would encourage you to look at the top one, which is the operating cost per hour. That's just the cost of providing the service. And then, you know, you pick between the other two, because they have their pluses and minuses.
Okay, any other? Okay, is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
Moved by Wiener and seconded by Przezinski. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Okay, the next item. Excuse me. Next item is programming $7.8 million in Regional Measure 2 funds and allocate $5.1 million, excuse me, of those funds to BART for the EBART project. Craig?
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Craig Bosman from the Programming Allocations staff here for item 3C. This item would program $7.8 million in Regional Measure 1 funds to the EBART project and allocate $5.1 million of those funds. There's three components to this action. First, the Pittsburgh Civic Center station. Staff recommends programming and allocating $2.4 million to construct this infill station at Railroad Avenue. So that would be between the Pittsburgh Bay Point transfer platform and the Antioch station at the end of the line. This station was a contract option that received a favorable bid, and station funding is also being provided by BART, the Contra Costa Transportation Authority, the City of Pittsburgh, and nearby property owners. The second component of this action would be for construction management. Staff recommends programming and allocating $2.7 million. In 2007, MTC made a $3 million commitment of Prop 1B spillover funds, mm-hmm. of which only approximately $300,000 materialized. So this allocation of RM1 funds would make that commitment whole. And finally, for the project reserve, staff recommends programming but not yet allocating $2.7 million to the project reserve. Due primarily to higher-than-expected bids for construction and equipment costs, this project's reserve has fallen below appropriate levels for the project contingency. And so, if needed, these funds would be allocated at a later time. The staff recommendation is to refer MTC resolutions 3833 revised, 4137 revised to the commission approval. For approval. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Hey, thank you. Questions? Okay, seeing none, I will move this item. Is there a second? And a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. And thanks, staff, for the work that they've done in a cooperative way with the other agencies that you heard mentioned. Okay. Next on our agenda is the Regional Measure 2 Capital Program Update. And that's Craig also.
Okay, so this is the Regional Measure 2 Capital Program Update for the $1.5 billion RM2 program. The quick overall picture is that of the $1.5 billion that's been programmed, $1.3 billion has been allocated, and of that, $1.1 billion has been reimbursed. The unallocated balance is largely due to projects that have recently been through the delivery strategy, which I'll be speaking about in a moment. And the projects that have allocations that are unreimbursed are largely in construction. A couple of the more prominent ones are BART extensions and recent allocations that were just made, such as Fairfield-Vacaville train station. The majority of projects are on track and under construction, and several sub-projects have been completed. We continue to monitor the projects and work with sponsors to make sure that they're on track, and we're seeing a lot of progress. Since the last full report in 2012, since we've been working on the delivery strategy, of course, we've seen a lot of project elements completed. I'd highlight a couple of being the Caldecott Tunnel and the I-80 truck scales. And then, as I mentioned, the strategic delivery project that you all went through over the past year to move projects that were experiencing delivery delay to construction, we've made a lot of progress. Over the past several months, we've made allocations for Fairfield-Vacaville train station. That was last month. And a number of other construction allocations that are really moving these projects forward. We've also made a lot of allocations for pre-construction activities, including this month in the downtown San Francisco ferry terminal expansion and the I-680 HOV gap closure and express lane conversion. So the overall story of the strategic delivery process is that we've moved a lot of projects towards construction, or they're already in construction. I'll highlight a few specific projects as well. The BART to Warm Springs extension is well underway. Approximately two-thirds is complete, and they're currently focusing on the Fremont Station, the Walnut Avenue overpass, and some traction power. The Oakland Airport connector is actually opening next weekend. So Friday, November 21st, is the grand opening celebration, and it'll be open for revenue service on the 22nd. So that's exciting news. Fairfield, I just mentioned, the construction contract award is coming up very soon, and limited notice to proceed will follow shortly thereafter. And Transbay Terminal, we spoke a lot about. This aerial view is actually from their office. It's very well situated to monitor the project. And the below ground construction is really coming along, and since this picture was taken, the first structural element above ground has been put in place. So over the next years and months, you'll see that building start to really take place above ground. EBART, you all just moved the Pittsburgh Civic Station forward for approval. Two major contracts, the trackwork system and facilities finishes, and the vehicles contracts have been awarded with notices to proceed issued. So those are two major elements that will be moving forward shortly. And a lot of the other contracts are nearing substantial completion. SMART continues to progress towards its expected opening date in late 2016, I believe. There's a lot of track reconstruction, bridges going on, and pilot testing of their DMUs. Some roadway projects, the I-80, I-680, and State Route 12 interchange. Construction is ongoing, and PS&E is being prepared for the next two packages. In I-580 rapid transit corridor improvements, the westbound HOV is expected to be open next summer, and the HOT lane is expected to open next fall. And finally, the I-880 north safety improvements. Construction has begun as of this summer, and we're expecting a five-year duration. So that's a brief update. Happy to answer any questions.
Questions, comments?
I know it's been a long meeting, so thank you quickly. I just want to thank everybody. This is actually a project I've been following since I was a council member, the BART extension to the Oakland Airport is critical. It will be a critical component, I think, in the future for Coliseum City, whichever format that takes. And I know that there will be some station changes because of that development, and so they'll be coming. BART will be has committed to that. And again, I hope people join us on the opening of the BART next week. And it's ahead of the secondary schedule, and I understand it's almost exactly on budget, so we should be happy. I know that it took a lot of meetings before my time here. I remember standing on that side of the podium to get you guys to agree to that. So I really want to thank all of our colleagues. I think, again, it's help will help build the whole East Bay connectivity. And even though we don't talk about airports very much, Oakland and San Jose on the sunny side of the bay have capacity to expand. And with our tourism, it will be critical. And I think the BART extension here will play a big part of that. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Okay. No other questions. This is an informational item, so thank you for the report.
When is EBART supposed to open? Never mind.
Okay. Okay. The next item on the agenda is the California Transportation Commission update. Anne?
Morning, Ann Richman. Kenny Cao, who usually does this report, is actually at the November CTC meeting today. So just quickly looking back to the October CTC meeting, there were significant allocations of Prop 1A funds to BART for their Hayward Maintenance Complex, of STIP funds for the U.S. 101 project through Marin County. The CTC also released draft STIP guidelines for the next STIP cycle in 2016. Those will continue to be refined over the next year or so. And I should also mention that at today's CTC meeting, the CTC will be considering adoption of the regional active transportation programs that you all adopted recently. That's all I have on the CTC report.
Hey, thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just wanted to thank you, thank Ann for the report here. I'd just like to note that about a couple of weeks ago, I had the pleasure, it really was a pleasure, to start off down at Atherton Avenue in Novato at the beginning of the Marin Sonoma Narrows project and progress through the San Antonio Road area, where work has already started on the preliminary preparation and the relocation of a water aqueduct for North Marin Water District, and on to actually being able to climb up onto the new Petaluma River Bridge, which is under construction at the moment. So I just wanted to note how important this is to both Sonoma and Marin counties, but also draws attention to the major shortfall to completing this project, which is $250 million of unfunded projects. So while everybody is excited and to see the work being done and done expeditiously, we have some really heavy lifting ahead of us to complete that very important segment of our region's transportation project. And finally, there is a bike pad connection that keeps people off the 101 between Novato and Petaluma. And there's a very elegant little 1 mile segment just north of Uumpali State Park. And we were able to observe that. And that was formally opened for bicycle movement just over a week ago. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and appreciate all the support from MTC in this matter. And I'm like Mayor Kwan, like Commissioner Kwan, you know, looking on into the future and projects yet unfunded and yet unbuilt. But I'll be here as long as I'm able to remind you all of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions?
Just quick one. quick
yes.
comment? So I'm wondering, I was very impressed by the amount of staff, amount of work that's being proposed and what's happening in the Bay Region. Have we ever done any economic analysis of what it means to the money that we put into these funds and how many people we employ and how it generates? Because I think there's a real story to be told there if we could, you know, figure out a way to really analyze the amount of money we're putting in and being matched and what's happening with the economy. And I think it's just something that would help us in the future to be able to convince the public and others that this is the right steps to take.
Bay Area Council's done, I think, a couple of different studies, slices at it. So we can get copies of those for the commission. You could take a look at them. It's often we talk about transportation in terms of short-term jobs, but it's really the long-term economic growth that it facilitates. I mean, think of the interstate system. I mean, it probably, even though it cost a fortune, paid for itself 3-4 times over.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Anna, for the report. Next item of business is public comment. I have no speaker card. Is there anyone from the public wishing to address the committee? Seeing none, this meeting stands adjourned until December 10th here in the same location.